Writing down all these like southern expressions.
Southern?
Yeah, you know, like I don't chew my cabbage twice.
I'm happy as a kitten chasing a leaky calf. Yeah. That one's one of my favorites.
Yeah,
I love it.
They're so funny.
I love southern expressions. They're so good.
Give me more.
Oh, they're all on my phone, which is
that's okay. We're being present.
I just love funny expressions in general. Yeah. There's also like sailor expressions.
In the PEI swearing, there's like a whole like thing of them, and one of them is like, "I'm gonna break into your house and slam your cupboards."
And one I saw on that, like,
you're on a fishing trip with your fodder.
One of them on your fishing trip with your fodder.
If you don't want the cookie, stay out of the kitchen.
Yeah, there was one I heard where this like surly captain sailor guy was like, "If you want sympathy, it's between you'll find it between syphilis and shit in the dictionary." And I was like, "That's brutal, but also really golden expression." Like, this is a rough and tumble seafaring.
What?
It's between shit and syphilis in the dictionary if you're looking for sympathy. He was like, because it was like a shitty crew member. He was like, "Listen, we're all on this boat. You got to do the work. If you're looking for sympathy, you'll find it between shit and syphilis
That's
in the dictionary."
Such a tradesman thing to say.
So trades
funny.
Guy thing to say, you know, like such a surly sailor construction site.
Really like it. I really like it. So we start every episode with like a cover of a song with Squish involved. Are we looking okay there levels wise?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So we just got through the Christmas thing, so maybe we don't do Christmas anymore. So let's think of it. First song that comes to mind.
Katy Perry, Firework.
Baby, you're a squish pervert.
You're a squish pervert.
You're gonna make the good one squirm.
Oh, no, your brain is in the gutter. So funny. Oh my God, I love your goofiness. So good.
Thank you for sourcing, for giving us the good source.
New Year, today. Like firework.
Totally.
New Year.
Yeah.
Katy Perry.
Okay, I'm gonna do formal introductions here.
Yeah.
So today we have our first ever guest in the Squish. It's my lovely friend, Eleanor.
Just Eleanor, like Cher. Just like
just Eleanor. One name.
Just
only.
Eleanor. No, Eleanor Shishang, who has an amazing last name. Just figure it out for yourself.
Figure it out for yourself.
We call.
I like that. Money, baby.
We call her Smelly. We call her Smelly It. Ella Lovely. I don't know many different things, but I met lovely Miss Eleanor working at the Canadian College of Performing Arts. I think 4 years ago now.
Oh my God.
And we became best buds hot off the press when I pooped in an out-of-service.
You pooped in a what?
I pooped in an out-of-service toilet on my first day of work. And I had to panically figure out what the fuck to do. And Eleanor didn't
judge me for it. That's my worst nightmare. That's like the worst nightmare is the toilet's broken and you've already taken a poo.
Oh, it was so good.
We handled it.
Oh, yeah. I know how to fix toilets because, fuck, that's the nightmare. You're like, I need to know how to do this
in case it ever happens. It's like a pro bonding tip with your coworkers is just really fuck something
once
up first day.
Yeah. Once you've seen the other person's poo and also the moment of the anxiety of that, you're friends for life after.
It's a poo bond.
I definitely didn't look
the
at
poo
it.
Poo bond.
No. It was my first day as operations too. I was like, great. This is it.
Sounded like a smoke detector.
I have no idea.
No.
If it is your smoke detector and it happens again, it's just it needs a battery.
Where's our muster point?
Run.
I have mustard in my fridge.
Where's our muster point? I have mustard in my fridge.
So here's the thing is Eleanor is really funny and she makes me extra giddy, and there's probably a lot of giggles in this episode,
like
which
it.
Is the
we're
reason that we love her.
We're happy to have a
but
first
she's
guest.
A badass arts scene bitch who, after working at CCP, I'm gonna let you share a little bit, but I just want to give a little bit of context. Went to the VEC and was the lead bookings manager.
Yeah.
And you were a floor manager, and you did a lot of different kind of roles at the VEC, as you had to do in small non-for-profits. And yeah, just took a bit of a risk and did some really epic work for the community. And then you had a fucking baby.
Had a baby.
And now is starting your own independent more take on your role in this creative scene. And I think you have a lot of valuable input on how to do all of those things. And I'd love to kind of pick your brain as to how you got there and like your dreams with everything. But yeah, I don't know if you're okay with me starting from the top with, yeah, maybe how you got interested in the arts.
How long were you at the VEC, just out of curiosity?
I'm so flattered to be here.
We're so happy to have you as our first guest. We're really excited.
We are going to let you talk.
And we are meeting our goal of having our first guest in the new year. But we wanted to have our first guest in January.
I'm so happy to help.
Because I'm just wondering what your VEC era was. Like, were you there through till the end? Yeah, that's what I thought.
Just at the end. So I was there the second last year, and then my mat leave was the last year that they were kicking around. So when they brought in Layla Sutherland as the executive director, that was like I started like 3 weeks before she got there. Mm. So that was
2023.
Yeah, I guess I started in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just in the summer. And then went on mat leave like the following summer. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was really nice.
I should actually probably turn off the dehumidifier so it doesn't have
that. Oh, that humming sound in the background? Yeah, because I could hear that for sure. That's great. So you had, did you enjoy your experience there at the back of the, I mean, at the end, it must've been kind of sad being there for the end of it. Well, I know it was very.
Because I didn't go back at the end of it. Did I enjoy my time is a complicated question. I think that was like my dream job.
Yeah.
And I think with a dream team, like that's my dream job is like helping and supporting artists be in a space doing what they want to do and collaborating with and supporting the venue's ability to say yes to ideas.
Yeah.
And like,
that's important.
And being able to curate who's in the space and who gets to be on stage. And that is, I get shivers talking about it. It's just a dream. And while I was there, there was a lot of roadblocks to being able to do that really well. And and it was hard for me emotionally just because like I do have such an emotional investment in that job.
I get that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can get really frustrated at the roadblocks that happen because you're like, if only this wasn't such a roadblock, I could do so much.
Yeah.
Like, we could make such a difference. But mm-hmm. there's often this, like, red tape and bureaucracy and, like, different interpersonal relationships that, like, affect that. And especially with the VEC having such a long history and so many people rotating in and out of it, especially in the last few years. Like,
yeah.
Just as someone who's been connected to a lot of different people who've worked at the VEC, like, I've seen a lot of turnover there in the mm-hmm. since, like, Chris's time and him leaving, you know, like, particularly, like, just around the end of his time there. There was lots of turnover, and then even more so from then onward, even just from reaching out to people for potential show ideas and stuff, just seeing who was contacting me changing all the time.
The nature of arts plus not-for-profit. It's like so fluid.
It is fluid, and I think they really struggled like recovering from the pandemic. They had a really great deal with their landlords and got a lot of like rent sort of covered, and that's I think inevitably, I mean, the building was for sale and like that would have happened whether they were up on their rent.
Oh, it was for sale that whole time.
It came up for sale like in the early summer of I guess this year.
Oh yeah.
And then sold like a month before they closed, I think. And so whether or not they had a good COVID recovery, which they didn't, like I think the building still would have sold. And
I feel like that's a tough thing that venues got hit with hard is the post-COVID, like a lot of people upped their prices, but artists weren't afforded that. And so it was the rent would spike, but you're not able to up what you make. So you can't up what you pay. And then the same thing with being, I remember hearing post-COVID, all of the cover bands banding together to say no when the bars downtown that can definitely afford to pay them, and I do not care if they hear and get mad at you for that, because F you for trying to undercut artists who can barely survive as it is. But they were trying to lower the guaranteed rate of their cover nights, and that's a lot of work, and you're not even getting to play your own music most of the time. You're playing covers just to make
money.
You're
selling your soul, but for less, like, okay?
But it's like, you know, they're all exceptional musicians who are doing that to fund their actual passions a lot of the time. And they had to all band together and say no together as a unit, and so that they wouldn't just ask the next band and out of desperation coming out of COVID, people would say, because they were counting on the fact that artists were eager to get back to playing. And they were trying to pull that. And I feel like the same thing happened with the business rents. What am I trying to say? The rent hikes. It's been pretty crazy to see, because I've heard that from a lot of different businesses out there, that the rent hikes of commercial rent just went sky high and they couldn't afford, they had to close between that and the COVID recovery.
Yeah, and everybody got all of this like funding during the pandemic to continue. So like the VEC didn't actually ever close. Like maybe they closed for 3 weeks, but then they ran shows the whole time because the government was like handing out cash, like no tomorrow. But then eventually, like any of the breaks that you got, like from the landlords or whatever, they had to get paid back. And so that's, I think, what kind of put them in a precarious position, at least in the case of the VEC. And then also, like, there's different ways to structure financial agreements to perform at venues. And some involve the venue taking on more risk, and some involve the venue taking on very little risk. And so there was a lot of back and forth on, like, how the venue could recover while still supporting artists and not taking on too much risk. So that, and I had different opinions than some other people.
It's such a hard thing to juggle.
Yeah, it is hard.
If you had like free reign, and not to, you know, it's not shitting on anybody else and the choices they made at the VEC or anything else. We know everybody does what they can with what they're given in those scenarios, especially as a nonprofit.
I really think that they did the best they could. Yeah.
If you had the free reign and there weren't the barriers and limits, what would you have done?
This is a safe, no barriers space.
Yeah. If you had the reins at the VEC and they were like, do what you can to see if we can spin this around, what would your Hail Mary have been?
I mean, like, hindsight 2020 for sure. So I definitely have such an advantage. Like, I think one of the big things that I would do differently if I was like in a precarious situation is like throw more transparency to the people who love the VEC. Like, there's such a cult following to the VEC, and all of a sudden we were like changing like policies, and the booking policy changed, and XYZ, and nobody knew why those things were happening.
Yeah, I heard some frustration about that too.
And nobody wanted to be like, here's the situation, we're, you know, 20K in debt, like, this is kind of our time to be cautious, and we want you to know so that you're not like freaking out.
Yeah,
like that would have helped so much.
Community would have probably thrown fundraisers. 100%. Like, I would have performed for free at fundraisers at the VEC. Like, I would have done at least like a few free gigs just for the hell of it.
And there was just this lack of trust in the people who support that community, and I don't know why. But anyways, that's one of the big things. And I was trained by Chris before they brought in the new ED, and there used to be like the 80-20 door splits, which is like very common in a lot of venues. You can go in on a door split instead of just paying for the room.
Yeah,
and I am so pro.
Oh yeah, I love that as an artist, because it gives you that safety net if the show, like, if extenuating circumstances, it doesn't sell out the way you hope, then you're not at a loss while the venue is still profiting. That's kind of a shitty situation to endlessly be in as an artist.
Yeah, and it really allows like the venue to take it seriously, to help sell the shows. It helps the artists get in the door, and yeah, I don't know. That's what I would have done. I would have done more of those. And it would have been a little bit riskier, but I think having buy-in from the people in the room who are hosting, like the venue, I think that makes a big difference when everybody's all cards on the table.
I agree. I mean, that's definitely a thing that can help.
Can I ask you a question? You said that this was your dream job, right?
In theory.
How did you figure that out? That was the kind of dream job that you wanted?
Until I got there.
That's kind of cool though.
It was cool. It was like, I was working at CCPA at the time that this role came up, and my friend Catherine was like, hey, come work in the VC, there's this position open, you'd be great for it. And I was like, okay. And like applied on a whim. And I was like, I'm not qualified for this. It was listed basically, the description was like, you're going to be programming the venue. You're basically going to be deciding who comes in the venue, and you're going to be writing grants, and you're going to be doing X, Y, Z. So I was like, cool, I'm not qualified to do this, but I'm going to apply anyway, because I do have like the coordination part, and I do have the rental part. I did rentals at CCP.
Sounds like me with anything I've tried to do. Yeah. I'm not qualified for this, but let's see what happens.
Yeah, just like whatever. So I applied and interviewed twice and then got it. And I was like, oh my God. And I like remember having a conversation with the interim ED, and I'm like, are you sure?
The fucking imposter syndrome.
Like, are you? It's so real.
present in the room with us.
And I was like, this feels like a big job. It was a new role. You know, I was like, are you sure? And he was like, yeah. Like, of the, you know, 10, 15 people we interviewed, you're like the most qualified. And I was like, oh, okay. Sure. Let's do it. Let's try it out and see what happens. And then, yeah, when I was doing it and realized that it was like programming and grant writing and supporting artists in a space that is supposed to be written down as like an artist first organization, I was like, heck yeah. Man. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the best. And that's always been like when I went to theater school, that was like the ethos. Basically, it was like, you can't say yes to everything, but find what you can say yes to and push that. And that's as a technical person with a technical background and as somebody who has been in the arts for like a very long time, that's always the best way. Like, find what you can say yes to. So that's how, and that's what I thought the role was going to end up being.
Yeah. Can you explain a little bit about your technical background? Because I actually think it's so cool and not enough people know about our tech nerds, and we need to like highlight that work more as
Oh man, yeah, we can't do shit all without the tech side of things. Like, you gotta have those people to do that.
Yeah, so I went to York in Ontario for theater production, and I studied a whole bunch of things. They have a practicum program as part of their production stream, and that's what you just work on shows. So we did like a bazillion shows throughout school, and I worked jobs outside of school, and basically all my technical experience surrounded like technical management, so like technical direction, which is like an oversight of all of the departments, and also in lighting specifically. So I'm also a lighting designer.
She's lit.
Lit, bro. And
it's so important.
Yeah, it is important, and it's really fun to have that kind of oversight on how things come together. And it's basically just like logistics of the technical things, and yeah, it's pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that at CCPA too. Like, I ended up being associate production manager, and I ended up teaching students how to do lighting and how to do projections, and we did a little bit of sound mixing and lots of stage management stuff too. It's a lot of fun. It's really important.
She taught me how to show up to shows on time.
Oh, that's a good lesson.
We had call time.
Call time, and I was not there.
And Tash showed up 5 minutes to curtain. I was like, oh.
I almost got it.
I'm like, I'm going to kill you. I love you, but you're dead.
I was like, please show up at your call time.
I was just like, think of the poop bond.
Our poop bond. I can be late. We have a poop bond.
No, it was such a good, I think that's such a good thing that you need to be able to tread that line, actually, when you're making art with friends. It's like you're in a professional environment. You need to act professionally. And you did a really good job of maintaining a professional decorum despite like someone's personal relationship to you, which is for the sake of the project, which you're supposed to do.
It's very nice.
No, I totally use that like moving forward, because I run a lot of projects with friends, and I have to like, you have to be the boss sometimes because you need to get things done.
Yeah, I work
done.
A lot with friends too, and it can be a struggle. And sometimes when you butt heads, you got to figure out how to work through it. It's tough.
It is tough. Mm-hmm. It is tough. Sometimes when we recall this story, I feel bad.
I don't think you should. It taught me a lot.
In school, I had a similar situation. I had a friend, and he was in. He was a friend, and also my like
trying to lick the fucking prosciutto.
I had a friend, and he was also like my assistant technical director, and he like left a stapler on top of a ladder and left the room. You can't do that because somebody's gonna move the ladder,
and the stapler's gonna fall on them.
Gonna fall on his head. So I was like, "Oh, cool." So then I like took it. And I like walked over to the wardrobe. I was like, hey, and I thought I did it with such like calm coolness.
Which,
like,
you probably did.
Maybe.
Not enough people actually talk like in any like kind of tone. We don't get talked to aggressively enough, is my opinion. So it probably wasn't even that aggressive. But sorry, finish your story.
I was just like, do you know what this is? It's a stapler. Like, do you know where it is? Where it was. He's like, no. I'm like, you left it on top of a ladder. Don't do that again.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah.
And then walked away. And he was giving me a hard time for that every time I talked
to
him.
People don't like being told what to do.
I know. I felt bad.
Men often don't like being corrected in any way.
Yeah. So that might be true. Sure.
Like, maybe. You know, personally to say that. But.
No, I think, Eleanor, you're like a master communicator. Like, I really enjoy the way that you bring like humor and lightness into very technical and like adult mature environments confidently, and that's something that I try and do as well, and I like want to surround myself with people who can do both. And I think, Katie, you're like this too. It's like, we're going to get shit done. We can laugh about it along the way, but we take it seriously.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
what we're laughing at is not the actual project. We're not laughing at the stake, at the sake of the project. No. We're laughing at ourselves for thinking how ridiculous totally. Is that we can, well, we can do something like this, and but we actually my, can.
In my situation, sometimes too, I can, like, if I'm feeling really emotionally attached to something and really frustrated by the boundaries that are in the way that to me seem very movable or manageable if people prioritize those things, mm-hmm. that can sometimes affect my ability to communicate well. Like sometimes yeah. it might that like I had a moment this year where this last summer where I fully butted heads in a way that I look back on and I'm like, oh, I wish I handled that better with a close yeah. friend who I work with. And it's just like, and we've worked through it, I think, for the most part, but it's just one of those things where it's I couldn't help it because the frustration had built to a point, because the passion I have for the role and the limits in executing said passion
yeah.
started to get to a point where I'm questioning if the values align anymore, and where it's just like at the point where it's like if a role you're in and its frustrations pushes you to a point where you lose your ability to communicate in that good, healthy way.
Yeah.
Then sometimes you have to reflect on, yes, it's something I could have done better, but also maybe that's a situation to move from. Like maybe
yeah.
it's time to switch it up or whatever.
Yeah. And it's hard. And it's hard when, especially when you're emotionally invested. And I was going to say earlier also that like part of my technical background makes me like really justice oriented when people want to do things and you can't do them. And I'm like, but you can. Like
you can.
I know that you can. And
sometimes it takes a little more work and people don't want to put the more work in. Yeah.
Like we had this one show at the VC and some promoter wanted to do like a 360 stage.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. And it was like, it was like a rave show, whatever. And it was like right when all those like boiler room sets, they're still very popular, but right when people started doing them in Victoria.
Yeah.
And so like some DJ wanted to do it at Capitol, but 2 or 3 weeks before this like up and coming promoter group wanted to do it at the VEC. And I was like, oh, that's sick. Why not? Let's do it. And then we couldn't do it. I'm like, well, why? I don't want the cables to get stepped on. I'm like,
that's what cable mats are for.
They'll be fine.
It's also what cable mats exist for.
I know that they will be fine.
Rent some cable mats and put them down.
Or like, get the promoter to rent them. Like yeah, if they yeah. really are
if
that
they
committed.
They want to do the 360 show, bring some cable mats for safety and yeah. blah, 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 whatever.
And just tell them. Tell
like,
them
here's
what,
our requirements as a venue. If you want to do yes, a 360 show, this is what you got
to
bring in.
Yeah. Like make the rules. This is yeah. how we can say yes to you. This is what you need to do. And then do it.
Yeah. Our buddies do a lot of 360 filming for stuff. Like it's, the Blackwing Visual guys there.
Yeah.
So, it's such a cool
They're dope.
Thing.
They're super cool.
I like that approach too, because it's like you're still protecting yourself and you're protecting them. There is a compromise in every situation. Yeah. yeah. So how did you like handle that conversation? I guess you just didn't. Yeah. You just told us how you would have though. And
there's nothing in my position. There was no, like I didn't
yeah.
have the to ability to policy. Say
yeah.
yes to the technical I'm, things because I wasn't I've doing it.
Yeah, I get it. Because you're like, yeah. this could elevate us if we pull off this new thing and try this thing.
Yeah.
And yes, it's going to be a little more work, but it can reap so much reward
yeah.
and elevate us. And it can be this other thing we now offer the community that can possibly
yes.
help us with whatever situation
and
we're
this
in.
This is
yeah.
why
yes.
you're both on my board.
yeah.
Yeah, the Totally Together Collective is going to thrive because of you guys helping me build the policies that are going to help say yes to really cool projects
yeah.
like this.
And the best part about being on a board and I think policy making is that you get to change policy
yeah.
Yeah.
when it's no longer working.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that I think is important, and not to get too entrenched in old policy. Or
totally.
Like,
and to remember that as a board,
policy.
Like that's your job is yeah. to like... to keep things in check, to rein things in when things happen. And sometimes it can be really easy in situations for the board to be there as a figurehead, but forget that they have that power. And a lot of the times you forget it because it's working symbiotically, the relationship between whoever's creatively in charge or whoever's baby it is entirely, in this case it would be Tasha, there's a symbiosis between who you've chosen for your board and why you've chosen them and da da da. Whereas like that may not be as much of an issue. Whereas in some of the realms I've seen where it's no, these like you're the board, like you have the power to make the change.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to deal with the uncomfortability that comes mm-hmm. with whoever might be resistant to that change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really tough thing. And whereas in my case where it's been like, I'm like devastated about having to pull away from certain things, but I have to because it's just,
yeah.
I can't, there's so much possibility and I can't make any of it real because
yeah.
there's
yeah.
just not, the path is not there.
Yeah.
And I get that. It's like, you want to be.
I want to make my own. Yeah. And I want people who think outside of pre-existing paths to be along with me so that we can figure it out. And also people who are really good at simplifying things that seem very complex because the way that they've been built and gatekept and just bureaucracy in general. I think we need technical minds like yours that can break it down and just make you feel like you have autonomy and power in those worlds. And then you're making your own world still. Like, you don't have to subject yourself to, I don't know, feeling separate while still doing it completely your own way.
Well, the gatekeeping and, like, the mentality of we can't give away these secrets, we don't want other people doing this, is absolutely detrimental to our scene and artists.
Because
it doesn't help us thrive or teach everyone. I'm always saying, like, someone's, oh, yeah, I can't remember what it was about, but someone was like, oh, yeah, like, I'm like, don't, it's not taking my idea. Go do the thing. I would be happy if it happens. Yeah. Like, go do the exact same thing I'm doing. For the community. Go do the youth thing I'm doing. Go take the exact thing and copy it and do it somewhere else. So there's more of it. I don't care.
Yes,
like, that's
your
the whole
success
point.
Is not taking away from
my joy. And that's the thing. In this scene, that, like, we're a small island that is consistently losing venues and spaces for artists. So gatekeeping that shit is only doing a disservice to yourself in the end and everyone else, because you're playing a part in taking away opportunities and spaces for people. Whereas if you're just like, here's the things, here's what I learned, you don't have to, like, figure it out on your own. Like,
more.
It's just, more is more.
Yeah.
Because the more passionate people you have out there trying and failing or trying and succeeding and doing the thing and creating more places to do things, the more there is.
Yeah.
Like, I felt a loss of certain energies in the community until I stumbled into Tasha's crew and seeing how they're doing things really gave me, like, a bit of hope, because I was like, oh, there is this whole young community that's really fighting to, like, recharge the scene and make spaces wherever they have them, if it's in their own backyards and, like, you know, but doing it in a way that's also conscious of their neighbors and everything else so that it's sustainable.
It's
like,
sustainable,
it's really, really,
that's
like what we need more of in this city.
Yeah. And that's why I want to hold on to people like you, but I also want to make sure that we don't lose our technical people to, like, uninspiring things. So I feel like my next thing that I want to pick your brain on is, like, how do you feel that you stay creative while being more of a technical approach to, like, supporting artists and, like, maybe looking forward at, like, how you want to, like, stay creative and inspired yourself?
Good question. I feel like there's so much creativity in administration and, like, project management. And that type of problem solving requires a bit of a creative brain. And so, like, that's probably it. Like, it's inspiring because there's always a challenge and there's always a roadblock, and navigating those things is creative.
The high of, like, the successful troubleshooting thing is a thing. Like,
yeah.
You're like, oh, I troubleshot that and it's my bitch and I did it. It's fuck yeah.
And that's also how I feel about sort of, like, when you're talking about, like these governmental systems, like when you're making your nonprofit, like the way that I frame those things in my brain is like, oh, like, here's a fun riddle. Like, here's a fun video game.
Puzzle. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm going to solve this puzzle.
Yeah, like,
I love that approach.
Because all of the rules are on there. And it's honestly, like, how can you sift out the rules you need to follow? And it's the same for grant writing. Like, how can you sift out all the rules and then follow them? And the hard part is kind of sifting through it to see which rules are important.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, like, I have, you know, a friend that works for the government and she does a lot of communications writing, and they have to write for, like sort of the most simple way so that it's understood by the most people. So I think she said it's like a grade 5 reading level or something.
And even then people struggle.
And it's fine. And it's not that it's just because it's like simple language, it gets really convoluted because you kind of need so many words to do it. So then it becomes like long and dense and the websites are really like 90s. Oh, yeah. And
I remember like half of my job at when I was working for the health insurance was just explaining to people how to find things on the websites,
exactly.
Like how to find forms and whatever. And
it's exactly that. And so, yeah. So I could just kind of find it fun to like sift through all of that and be like,
you're the best colander.
That's
like
really
ever
good.
Need.
Yeah. That's the thing people need a lot of, because a lot of artists really hate that part and struggle with that part and can find it deflating to their creativity.
It's so fun.
And that's why it's important to sift through those things with someone who like to collaborate, because a lot of the time you put the pressure on yourself to do the thing. And if you do that and you figure like you got to do it all yourself,
yeah,
then you're only going to frustrate yourself in the end.
Hey guys, welcome back to Have You Heard? It's Tasha here, just giving you a little bit of a break from this wonderful conversation with Eleanor. We had so much fun talking with her. I do apologize if you hear some saxophone in the background, as Mr. Isaac is practicing right now, but I thought I'd bring you another special local treat from our wonderful friend, Gabe Elias. So we're going to play his new tune, Digging, today, and I just want to play long enough so that you guys get lost in it the way that I do. This song has so much texture to it and so much dreamy atmosphere. I met Gabe at the VEC, actually, and that's why I thought of him when we were editing this episode. And he and I got along swimmingly, and we did a couple busking sessions where he would play the flute or the violin and the fiddle, and I would play guitar and sing. And it was just, it's such a pleasure to meet people through the music the way he and I met. And then you get to hear them just grow as artists, which he has done exponentially. And he works with a couple of people that are in the Figs as well. He's worked with Braden before and Isaac, and yeah, he's just a really incredible talent. So without further ado, here's Gabe Elias, Digging. A couple of weeks ago, Eleanor and I built her website.
I have a website now,
and I would love for you to talk a little bit about what that website was for.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay. So my website, Tash and I traded, we traded services. She helped me with my website, and then I'm going to help her write some grants for her NFP. Yeah. And so we made this website together. It was super fun. And, like during my mat leave, I had been like working with an artist on some grant writing and a little bit of tour promo. And then, you know, I've been like stage managing and lighting designing. Anyway, so I guess the website is like, it's like my online business card where I offer some artist services, which include grant writing and stage management and artist management. Yeah. And administrative services generally for arts organizations. And I'm kind of in this weird space where I'm like straddling the line between these two worlds in Victoria, like the theater performance world and the music performance world.
Oh, yeah, I've dabbled those lines too. It's interesting.
It's an interesting space to be in, because both I think can be really exclusive in some ways and very inclusive in other ways. And so yeah, that's what it is. I think I'd really like to be an artist manager.
From the sounds of it, it seems like it'd be right up your alley.
Yeah, I think it'd be really fun. Yeah, I know. I just want I just want people.
And it's nice to have someone who can blend those worlds too, because I love seeing a lot of those things blending now too, where like they're using live band for these different performances.
Yeah,
like,
the burlesque live band things are sick. Yeah,
I love it. We did it years ago with our band and it was so much fun. And then I'm watching like Nathan do it now a lot with like Keith shows and stuff. And it's just so great. And I love that. And I feel like those worlds do can sometimes feel like exclusive from one another. Like a lot of musical theater folks with great voices that I talk to feel like daunted by the idea of like writing their own music and stuff like that. And it's a gap that can be bridged so easily. Well, and they're also, they all know each other so well. Like I love all, I have so many friends that are in that musical theater world. They're amazing. It's a world that I always wanted to get into when I was younger, but it was just, there was all these things that got in my way in life. And there wasn't the money. I wanted to go to CCPA when I was a kid, and there was no money for post-secondary in my family. So it just was never a thing. And so, and then my life still took me in a full circle way to like being around all these people who graduated from CCPA and like doing stuff with them. But a lot of the time, even with them like being reassuring and welcoming in their own ways, they're still all so like have spent all this time together, and they have all this experience in this way that sometimes it feels like they're a freight train and I'm like a little kitty train and I'm like trying to keep up. And it's just interesting to like try to fit into that keep up with that.
On the flip side though, like having worked with a lot of those students, like the ones who are classically trained and especially from like the eras before, like you know, I know that they don't know they're not as skilled in improv and they're not as skilled in casual performance that isn't scripted and that isn't, you know, traditional. And that thing kind of intimidates them the way that I don't think it intimidates
other folks. And the fun and joy of just doing something, even if it's not perfect or perfectly scripted, there's a lot to be said. That's why I love Keith's shows, Keith Sonic. It's just like, come and play and be silly and weird. And do we even know what's going to happen? No. Like, we're doing the show and we don't know what's happening. But it's fucking great.
The judgment piece enough to like get out of their heads. But like, so much of theater is very judgmental, actually, I found.
There's a lot of.
And I found maybe it's like just leading back to the like the work ethic thing comes from putting these like really intense containers where you have like a set time for rehearsal and a set end product date, whereas like if you're a band, you're a band for like as long as you want and hope to be one,
and you're so
it's
a lot longer, like a family,
but it's also like a lot longer of a timeline, so it's stretched out and it's not as like pressure cookered, you know. But I did find that just like dibble dabbling in the theater communities that there was like a lot more pressure, but then also judgment. And And I feel like that's just inevitable, but it's like, again, something.
And sometimes even an unintentional feeling of like you're an outsider, even if that's not their intention. It's just like sometimes because there is such a pressure cooker vibe.
Yeah.
They don't have the time or energy to really like help someone who isn't used to that get used to it. Yeah. So it's just like if you want to get in, you just got to try to trial by fire and try to keep up and whatever. So it's funny. I still am like kind of contemplating how I can contribute to those communities in in a way that like is beneficial, but also like feels holistic. But it's one of those things where you're like, there's just, it would be so epic if like we could bridge the gaps more. I see it though, like when, like with the Salty Broad crew, because they're doing something together often, they kind of have that, it's kind of more like a band vibe there.
Yeah,
because
they're good in between
multiple
for sure.
shows all together, rather than it's like everyone's just doing, they're also doing random shows and there are other things. Sarah's doing so many, can't even keep track. But you know, because they're planning things together throughout the year, and it's them doing it all the time, that does create this nice like
and
vibe.
They've probably really nailed on the head what I'm trying to achieve by like Squish and just a lot of other things, which is just getting really good at communicating with each other. Because the better that your communication skills are and your conflict resolution skills are, you are more comfortable going back and working with the same people because you are salvaging those relationships. You're not like throwing it all in and then burning yourselves out and burning all those bridges and then having to find new people. Like if there is a sustainable like need, it's especially when you're on an island in a tiny little arts community, but working as a collective like that is powerful.
It is powerful. And I think it's important to be able to tell someone like, hey, you're frustrating me right now with the way that you're working, with the way that you're doing this,
and
whatever.
And to be able to have a dialogue about judgment. and like being critical about each other's like work ethics and approaches, and understanding like from an abundant lens of just because you're different than me doesn't mean it's bad. It just means that we probably shouldn't be doing the same thing. We should probably, you know, have a different role than each other or work at things differently. And I think you're really good at that. Like when you're a project manager, you can come out and like see from both worlds because you've operated in the theater and the music world.
Yeah.
And then also just like event booking in general world, you can have that really cool global perspective of like, like just helping people categorize the chaos of art because it's so fluid and fucked.
Yeah, well, it should be fluid, and you just need somebody to be, you know, flexible and hilarious with all that fluidity and and find a way to do it. And what's cool, I think, about the Salty Broads and like Sarah Murphy in general is I think she's really good at they're really good at conflict management and resolution.
I'm just guessing, but.
No,
yeah, like she really is. Sarah's really, really great at that.
And also like a really good project manager herself.
Oh my God. There's like a machine. I don't understand how she does it all.
She's really cool.
Oh God. She goes like a crazy freak train. She's insane. She does so many things. And then and just like puts she'll project manage and the whole thing and then be performing in it. And it's an admirable.
She's very epic.
We
have the same birthday.
We're birthday twins. Leo season.
Yeah. We sometimes try to have our birthday parties on the same weekend.
Did you come to that one at the Cradleona
thing? No, I didn't.
Oh my God. That was a time.
All my friends went to her party.
Oh my God.
Which is fair. Okay. Yeah. I would have gone too, but I could not.
It was a pretty crazy house.
Yeah, it looked like a lot of fun. And then Lauren Ball, who's kind of new in town ish, is also straddling that kind of line. Like like she was in Hail Santa and performed at the Poodle for Park and Bark.
She's got a really great brain for like marketing and stuff like that.
She Superstar. And so she's also working with Snafu, who I work with a lot, which is like Kathleen Greenfield and Ingrid Hansen and Snafu's really doing a lot of interesting things that are also straddling these two worlds and is sort of an antidote, I think, to this like traditional musical theater like vibe. And they do like Snafu and Atomic Vaudeville work together a lot. And Atomic Vaudeville famously works with a lot of CCPA grads.
Oh, yeah.
Both of those groups, Snafu and Atomic Vaudeville, are, I think, really kind of straddling the line between and like breaking down the barriers of like what a traditional musical theatery traditional theater vibe is and like coming up with their own like non-hierarchical way navigating creating new work. That's really, you know, kind of a privilege to be a part of, to be honest. So Lauren's been doing that and I've been doing that and they're really great.
Yeah, they have a great team. The Salty Broad team in general is just full of an amazing amalgamation of talented humans that blow my mind on the regular. And that I'm just like,
same with Atomic Vaudeville.
I just admire to like be at that level in some ways, you know, where I'm like, man, how are you doing all the things?
Yeah.
I feel like you are, though.
I know. It's like,
well, musical theater is a different, like, I've never gotten to dive into that. Like, I always wanted to like do more of that, acting and stuff like that.
VOS, like, check out VOS. You have to pay a little bit to participate. I think it's like $75 or something.
VOS.
Oh, yeah.
I know it. I've heard it before, but I forget what the acronym is.
Yeah, so do I. Victoria Opera Society.
Oh, the Opera Society. Yeah, yeah.
But it's not Pacific Opera. So they're based out of Esquimalt. They're right next to Piers. Shout out to Piers. And it's important. Piers is important. Piers seriously, is legit, for real. Yeah, so it's right.
They've helped me as well.
Yeah, it's good. So their rehearsal space is right next to Piers. They have a shop there. They do musicals. They produce musicals. It's sort of elevated community theater,
cool,
where they do these like full-scale productions.
It's less intimidating than has like a less intimidating vibe. I did get approached once when I was doing Car Free Day by someone that was doing a production of Rent that was like, you have a great voice, you should audition. And I had a show that was the same time. Part of when I was really like, I was like fired up and had all the energy in the world, I was just in too many bands, so I didn't have time. And then I just was like, oh, there's, you know, like, can I even keep up to that level that like is at?
There's no way to know other than try.
But
you have to be in a space to try. But I would love to look into that with you too.
Yeah,
I mean, I've been really enjoying taking the like clowning thing on a little road. I think we're gonna do another clown show if you ever wanted to be part of that kind of stage presence. It's a little more, although like clowning's so open, and that's why I like Atomic Vaudeville, is they've got a really like wide definition of kind of clowning around mm-hmm. and what that means. But
yeah, their shows are cool.
Yeah, for anyone who hasn't seen their shows, highly recommend.
They do like yeah, traditional cabaret. Really, it's all political.
Atomic Vaudeville shows hilarious.
Yeah, what is it like? What is it about musical theater that's like the most intimidating, like part?
I don't know. Well, I mean, there's like a lot of the time you have to have. For some things, you have to have a dance ability as well, which is like, yeah, I don't have the stamina for that currently. But yeah. It was really funny. Sarah did this thing. One of my main feedback was for her was like, this workshop should be a 102 or a 103. Because as someone who came to a 101, I was like, whoa, this is a lot.
Yeah.
But she did this epic workshop where she like taught everyone a number from cabaret, yeah. the one with all the different language, like hello, bienvenue,
the welcome in.
Yes, yeah. Welcome in. Yes, that's I was gapping, but yeah,
that's okay.
She taught a group of people, and they were varying. Like, there's people who'd done it before, and there's yeah. a bunch of us who hadn't, and she did an amazing job. But it in classic Sarah fashion, she had this beautiful vision of yeah. like creating this big epic thing, and then but there was just different levels of people there, so we didn't get to the point that yeah. she'd hoped originally.
Right.
Purely just because like we had to go over things more than she expected. But management. And that's the thing where I was like, okay, this is like there's like maybe from just being such an observer, I was like, there's maybe like four or five of us here that would consider this a 102 or a 103. Like as someone, it was like, I said, who's it? But I still had so much fun, and like I kept up more than I expected to, which was nice to like see that about yeah. myself. But yeah, I think probably the most intimidating thing is just the amount of people who have done it so much and are so skilled, and then they just yeah. like they're
like weapons.
They're so good. Yeah. Yeah. Plus, it's like it feels like it's such a competitive thing that you're like. It almost feels like you're being rude taking space from people who've been working that hard that long to be in that yeah. realm, but at the same time.
I mean, I feel yeah. like everyone probably thinks like that, Sihan.
I think they do. Mm-hmm. I think they do. And like, yeah, in terms of danceability and stuff, it's super valid. Like, you know, but every musical is a little bit different. Like, you know, if dancing's not your thing, which is fine, like... Don't audition for Hairspray.
Yeah. But, I do love dance, but it would just take me a lot more prep time than other people where yeah. I feel sure, like I was like, I don't want to slow down
but
in
like,
rehearsal.
Forever. Rent, like, it's true that person came to you about Rent. It's yeah. like, there's not really a lot of dancing in that. And, yeah. like, the one number really that has a lot of dancing is Contact. And most productions take Contact out because it's a little raunchy.
Yeah.
Which is fine. And, yeah. And then, you know, when I did a lot of musical theater growing up. Unbeknownst to many, and I was in I was in Hairspray. I was like a dance kid, and I had major imposter syndrome. I was in this competitive program, and I was
yeah,
like
big time.
And I had auditioned there to be in Rent because I was one of those Rent kids who like just love musical Rent. Oh, yeah. So good. It's so good.
Who doesn't love it?
And when you're like an angsty teen, it's just like the perfect musical. So that was me. And then they were like, oh, but you can dance, so we're gonna put you in Hairspray. I was like,
oh. Okay, like, no, that's not a vibe I was going for.
That I wanted.
They're very different vibes.
I wanted
too.
To sing sad songs. So I was, yeah, I was a nice kid, and it was fun.
She was the new girl in town. Whoa.
Yeah, it was a good time. I have pictures. I'll show you them later. And
yes,
I'm flashing on the screen right now.
yeah, we just like flash these pictures.
Oh my God, yeah.
It teaches you so much, though.
It does. See, that's a big part of the appeal, is that a lot of my musical inspiration and life lessons growing up came from watching musical theater with my family. Yeah. Like, my grandpa was big into the classic Rodgers and Hammersteins.
Nice.
My aunt was super into all the, like, Frankie and Annette go to the beach, like, beach blanket yeah. bingo, all that stuff. So it was, like, and, like, Calamity Jane, all these things. All of these things were, like, my teaching.
Yeah.
And Shirley Temple was, like, the first, you know, yeah, all these things were my inspiration. Mm-hmm. And so... And but like the band was the first opportunity to do that, and then it just snowballed into multiple band opportunities, yeah. and then just like funneling into this music world,
yeah.
in a way where I was like, okay, I really still want to try this, but like I gotta find the right like realm and yeah. place to try it.
Oh, yeah.
But I love musical theater music and like get obsessed with it. I did have the idea, which I almost did it at a Thick production, but then I had to go away.
Mm-hmm.
I found out about my aunt's cancer progression, and I was just like, I cannot do this now.
Yeah.
And they were super supportive. But I have built a burlesque number That is to the This Is Me by Kiala Settle from The Greatest Showman.
Amazing.
And I want to do that at some point. And that's like my my way of doing a little musical theater in my own way, you know? Like,
yeah. Can I find a space for you to do that this year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could do that.
I would love that.
It's well, if Hazel's doing shows, like, I'm sure Hazel will be in it. And also Titty loves musical theater.
Oh, yeah.
Titty Bang Bang.
Yeah, I know. So great.
I'm sure she'll produce something again eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many different things going on in the city, but like, it feels like when someone's in an idea or like involved or doing it themselves, we can separate ourselves from it. And that's probably just like our own judgment with our own, you know, narrative. And it's like, well, they've already begun something. They must know so much more than me and are looking for people that know the exact same as they do. But it's like, I feel like they actually are probably like me, where I'm starting an not-for-profit. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I've never done it before, but I'm doing it anyways. And I want people who aren't actually confined to a way of thinking and do have a different perspective and have their own unique backgrounds to bring in. And I do think your musical, like, performance background is just as valid as an education. In fact, more because you've been in front of way bigger stages.
Yeah, Marty audiences. Always tells me, he's like, you know, the things that you don't think you know, you just don't have all the words for them that people learn in school. And I'm like, oh, that's a good way to put it.
And MCing and hosting and stuff, like, that's where I get my theater nerd gets to come out a little bit. And it's really satisfying because I'm like you, where I feel like I'm kind of locked in that musical box because it feels so good and I'm really comfortable at it now. That changing it up does feel a little bit nervous.
Well, I know, like, I'm literally like a lesser active board member for like, just like a member at large for the Salty Broad crew.
Nice.
But I know I could have pitched something for either the Simpsons Cabaret or Hail Santa, and they would have been super receptive and supportive.
It was a big year,
but I was just there was so much going on.
But like,
hot mess.
And I feel this way too, like me coming into the music scene and like trying to get involved, like through the VEC and then some. It's like, I feel kind of the same.
But somebody, you feel like a minnow in a sea of sharks, where you're like, but it's like, no one's really a shark. They're all like super friendly dolphins or whatever. Yeah. But you're just like,
I know.
But you feel like.
But it's the same for musical theater people too, and like, I guess it's different if you're like trying to hit up like, you know, the lead role, but like, it, you know, it's so competitive also doing music things too, especially as like an administrator. It's like everybody wants to be the booking coordinator. Not really.
Do
but, like,
they? I was going to say.
But like, everybody wants to work at the venue.
For
you
is going to be like, why artist management? Because it seems like a terrible idea. Isn't just it, because so, we're pains in the ass, artists in general.
It's
we can
so
be. It's it's hurting cats half the time.
I love it.
And it just, and it seems like these days, because there's not a ton of money in the performing realm, that because I've many times in my life was like, man, I could do so much more if I just went and found a manager, if I just found an artist management who's like, yo, here, I see your skills, here's what you should do. And but in looking into it, there wasn't a lot of people locally, and purely just because, like, usually there's like a percent cut, and for like productions and stuff, a lot of the time there's sometimes it can be better to manage those people because there's more income coming in from it than with bands and musicians.
I mean, I'm in this like unique spot where like I don't like, I'm still kind of a stay-at-home mom and I haven't gone back to work yet, so I'm like, okay, cool, I got like free time and just need a little bit of money. I want to just like fun, so it's like, you know, building this little career of mine, like just doing things for like a profit share is like enough for me.
Yeah,
and
really
I think
cool.
It's what artists need and it's what I need right now.
Oh, totally. There's so I can think of so many people who are incredibly talented and would be able to launch that talent so much farther if they just had someone with that managerial mindset brain, like myself included.
Yeah, and just to
but
point
also
out
like
Grant.
Greg Meeklejohn and shit, like he should be doing crazy stuff with his voice. It's insane. But just, and I feel like if, you know, there's those of us folks that like doubt ourselves a lot, if we just had like management being like, no, that's what we're doing. And we're like, all right.
Yeah, that's fun.
That's what we need.
That's what we're doing.
We need more people like you, Eleanor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also really, something I really like talking to you about too is just like bigger dreams that you've had with the festival scene. Because you are a Shambalama ding donger.
I'm a Shambalama. Well, my first festival was Wicked Woods.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Love.
I haven't been to it, but I've the Blackwing guys, they love it. They never shut up about it, and they show me so many clips from it. I love it. I love them.
I think I've met one of those guys
Shane
before.
Or maybe Scotty.
Scott.
Scotty's the sweetest. He's a sweetheart.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Scotty Boy is a sweet human.
And yeah, Wicked Woods is sick. They like doubled in size from the first year that I went, and they're in this like beautiful spot. But like anyway, yeah, so like starting a festival was why basically my partner and I moved here. We were like, mm-hmm. we spent all of our time going to festivals.
You
want to
start your own festival?
So we, yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So our friend, so it was me and my partner Jordan and his friend and like our mutual friend who's like my bro basically, and his name's August, has like a property up north in Prince George.
It's great. That's half the battles, is having a location, yeah,
room. And so it's his parents' property, but kind of like his dad's like a big, you know, festival goer too. So that's, he's like, best. That's sick, like let's do it. They got like 300 acres and so we're like, cool, yeah we're gonna do it. And so that's why we moved here. And like, I took that really seriously. I was like, okay, I'm gonna move to the island. I'm gonna boogie. I'm gonna like meet all the people, get into the right circles. They're gonna like, you know, because this is what we want to do. Yeah. Like, and collectively, it's what we want to do. Mm. I think a lot of people need places to perform.
If I could just work at festivals all year round. Yeah.
If I could live in a permanent festival.
Bars and like, yeah. I love playing music anywhere, and I will play music anywhere, but of all my experiences and having performed in a lot of bars and a lot of whatevers, and then a lot of festivals are always the best feeling.
They're fun.
Festivals. You get to be outside looking at the trees while you sing. You get this cool little feeling of community because everyone like sets up for a whole weekend sometimes, and you have this whole little like village
and
for
autonomous
a weekend.
Autonomous and outside of the normal culture of night culture where you just go to a bar and drink too. It's like you get to show up entirely how you and your body needs to show up.
Yeah,
there.
And that's part of this festival dream is like, because our buddy August, he's like a really big harm reduction guy, like,
yes, that's so
he was
important.
So he was a manager at Wicked Woods for harm reduction, and so we're all sort of very like harm reduction minded, and so we wanted to kind of do like half conference, half festival.
So here,
dude, that's
it.
I would love that, because a lot of I love those festivals that include like teachings and workshops and classes and stuff like that. I think it's such a great space to learn, and especially it makes it accessible because you've paid your ticket and all this stuff's included. There's not extra fees to go to each workshop the way there is when you try to do them in town and stuff like that's just such a huge
barrier,
important part of it, and especially for a lot of young folks who are like figuring out how to crack into things, like going to a festival and then learning a stuff while you're there is great.
So you wanted that was sort of our big dream, and that's why I learned so much about the nonprofit stuff, because I was like, we'll do our own sort of collective and make a board and blah blah blah. So that was, we were gonna have like harm reduction workshops and mindfulness, and we were talking about this at CCPA one time in the basement together, and like went off.
And I'm still.
It feels
down.
Very full circle. It feels like this collective being built, and everything seems like full circle.
Yeah, it does.
That's totally my goal too. I think like building these spaces and being just like the people that do the work to provide community with its needs. And I've heard this quote before that's like, you know, you can think of this as religious or not, but like God, if like you want to do God's work, all you got to do is feed people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that simple. It's just feeding people. It's just giving and like showing up for others without any like reciprocation expectation.
Yeah. Totally.
Like you just have to make sure that it's sustainable. But other than that,
living
a purposeful life where you're just like sharing the abundance with as many people as you can.
And you're
the
maybe
harm
feeding
reduction
their belly, heart, or soul, or mind, or feed their creativity. Just feed the people however you can.
Feed the people. Yeah. And shout out to Ollie, because I went to his after party after New Year's, and he had a full fridge of, like he had a full pulled pork.
Oh, yeah, that man feeds people like crazy.
Chili.
I'm kicking myself.
Yeah. And I was
like,
that's what you need, because we were going to go home because we were starving. Yeah. It was like 3 a.m. We hadn't eaten in like 6 hours. And he goes, go to my house. He wasn't even there yet. He's like, unlock. Here's where the key is.
Oh, my God.
Unlock the door. Go into my fridge. Eat whatever you want. And I was like, oh, my God, that's so simple, but it's so thoughtful. And it keeps people healthier.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps you way more balanced and regulated. And I was like, that's the kind of space I want to hold. And I'm so happy I'm surrounding myself with other people that want to hold that space. And they just show that they care about you in the simplest little way.
Yeah. And that was like, that was August's whole thing, too. He was like, I don't want to have vendors at our festival. Like, I just want to like make chili for people.
It's not a product.
I have the other world vibe where if people bring a meal to share, then it's like you can, you know, you can vend your, you can promote your vendor business, but like you're not free. Selling it on site. It's yeah, free. Yeah, exactly. That's really cool. And like yeah. that's a, yeah. you can get a grant to cover that or whatever. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah,
exactly. So that anyway, that was yeah. that's the dream.
That is a beautiful dream. I like that. I'm I don't just, know. I'm you so the name, I'm so on board. I really like
the name that you had. For this
dream. I don't remember.
Oh God, I put you on the spot. I'm sorry. It was a really beautiful. Did you trademark
it
yet?
Don't share it.
No,
it was something to do with light, and I remember it being kind of like, it was like a beautiful hippie name, but I really liked it. And you gotta text me when you remember it, and I'll edit it into the pot.
We talked about luminosity, but that was a thing already. And then we talked about
it's like an ideology.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'll remember later.
Okay. I'll edit it in. But it was really, really.
It was about dualism. That's what it was about. It was about dualism,
which is so important.
And there's like a word.
Oh my God, yeah, the duality of light and dark and stuff.
Yeah,
is
the
so
spirituality
huge.
Of dualism. So, but yeah, that's what it was about because, you know.
Yeah. Everything existing at the same time or whatever.
Oh God, yeah.
It's yeah. So
but all of life is balancing one thing or another, whether it's through your darkness and your light, your grief and your joy, or your ability to commit
or
to things versus your need
and
to
your
slow down.
Organization.
Yeah.
Right. And that, I think, yeah, that's a lot of it too, is being chaotic and also organized and dancing at night and
reeling
and learning during the day and
reel it in. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. It's in a swamp. I don't know if we'll be able to get up there and do it, but I would love to take that
if
idea
not there somewhere else
and do it somewhere else.
It's
yeah.
a need. It's a
well, yeah,
need.
You can always see if you can start somewhere smaller, local, where you don't have to worry about moving all of the things all the way to Prince George.
That's
and then
therapist
like said. Build up. That's so funny. I love
she was
this.
Like, can you start small?
Expectations.
That's hilarious.
I
love
like,
that.
I don't know if I can start small in my ideas. She's like,
I know.
Maybe
I could go big
or
go home
small.
Type of person. I'm yeah. very much like that too. But yeah,
we're
sometimes it can
small
be
small together.
Yeah.
But it's good to figure out the logic because then you can figure out all the the kinks
yeah.
before you have to like do everything in Prince George.
Yeah. And you know, getting the group of people
you're building
together
a following
to
so people will come out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful spot. But
it's a beautiful spot. So we have recorded now for an hour. So
oh
I'm wondering if there's a few things you could plug so people can find you on the lines. Because we talked about you on the lines.
What's your website?
Womp. It's ekcreative.ca.
Nice. Very simple.
Super simple. Yeah. I do creative things in Canada. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Not bound by location, which is really awesome.
Oh, yeah. Anywhere. Mm. Based here, based in Toronto. You know, back and forth. Anywhere.
I highly recommend, even if you're not ready to like take on a project, to reach out to Eleanor if you need like to de-scramble your brain in any way. She's really good at like helping it make sense, or at least laughing with you at how much sense it doesn't make. And that's always nice too, to feel seen in the chaos and not judged.
Yeah. And like in terms of like if I'm, you know, if you need help with a grant or with a being managed, you know, I'm not really charging much. My brother will kill me for saying that. He's like, charge people. I'm like, I don't.
Because Toronto is showing.
I don't want to. It's gonna be fine. Like, yeah, I just want to like, you know, help and profit shares are enough for me. A little percentage, a little cut for now.
For now,
it's fine. And you know,
well, and if you build it the way that like, you know, the person, it's a profit share. The more you're booking for the person, the more you're making anyway.
Exactly. So yeah, and you know, in terms of off advice, I like coffee. And cookies.
Yeah, so and cookies are good.
I accept payment.
Barter.
In cookies. Yeah, in bartering. I don't care. I just want to, you know, support and help.
Very much the same way. Very much the same way. I always get sassed for not
charging
what I like, or not charging enough or whatever. But
yeah.
Like, you know, unless it's a realm where like me charging less hurts others because there's like a standard, then like I'll, you know. But if it's a situation where it's only hurting my bottom line,
yeah,
then whatever.
Like when I'm a technician,
I
want
to do the thing. Then yeah,
when I'm a technician, I'm pretty close to IATSE rates because if I
yeah,
if
you undercut
the
sound
a,
guys,
you
they'll be mad.
Can't
they,
do it.
You can't do that. There's yeah. a whole the sound guy mafia. I'll come after you.
That's right,
not a real thing. But
you never hear them coming.
You never hear them coming. so many sound nerds will love that. That's
so
great.
Good.
That's great. I had
do you have any more questions?
I was yeah. the only other things I had on here maybe was like if you had any advice for like younger artists who are passionate about either the roles that you do or the roles that you manage, like
yeah.
things that you would think would be good solid advice for folks.
Yeah. I hope this is like all my experience, you know, not all of it, but primarily my experiences in theater, but I think this advice can go for music too. Like if you want to get involved, the two best things you can be are like available mm-hmm. and teachable. Mm-hmm. And I think in both these spaces, most people will, if you're available and you're teachable, they'll teach you how to do it if
yeah,
you're around.
That's really true. Yeah.
And, you know, the next best thing is kind. And like, and pretty much, you know, those three things are kind of all you need, I think, to, you know, continue and to grow your skills and to be invited back. Yeah. My advice. I think that'll take you a long way. I think this works worked well for me.
Then the only other question I had on here was from your view and your experience in the city, various places, obviously, because you've been at the VEC, you've been with CCPA, which are two huge, and then you're also affiliated with all these other things.
She's been around.
Are there things that you think, like in your opinion, that you think the Victoria creative scene in general can do better, like do more of to foster its growth or sort of get out of its own way, you know? Like, are there any things that come to mind from your experience that of seeing that people do or, you know?
I think this is such a good question. And I have like 7 million things.
I know, right?
In my head.
So good.
I think people are generally scared to step up to the table. And I think that there's room for everybody at the table. We talked about this a little bit, and it's true that, you know, the art scene is pretty small here. It's not teeny tiny, but I think there is room for everybody's art here. And I think a lot of people are scared to do it, or scared to offend, or scared to you know, put themselves out there because they don't think they deserve to take up the space or whatever. And I think that should go away. I think people should, you know, try and do it anyway. Do it scared.
Do it scared is a good solid piece of advice. That's definitely something I learned that was just going to be part of my fucking journey, was being scared and doing the thing. And if I hadn't got out there scared and done it, then I wouldn't have done half the shit I've done.
And that's so when I became a parent, I was like, Mom, I'm so fucking tired. Like,
that's the thing. Nobody's ready to be a parent.
How do I do it? I'm exhausted. She's like, you just do it. Grown-ups just do it tired. Like, parents just do it tired.
Yeah,
I was like,
so true.
Okay.
You're like, oh no, Mom doesn't have a magic solution. Come on.
I'll just do it tired. So doing it tired, doing it scared. And then, I don't know. I'm working on some projects to like try to, you know, post-secondary education that isn't a university, or like continuing education, coming up with, you know, places for people to, you know, keep growing their skills.
I love that. That's a big passion of mine as well, because I always felt like that was a big barrier, was that you had to have the finances and the grades to get into whatever program in order to get any freaking accessible, like access to anything. And I always felt like that was such a, you know, roadblock for so many people. That's why I like the Youth Jam thing is a thing, because I just wanted to create a thing that was accessible and you didn't need anything to do it. I feel like it'd be great if there was a lot more of that free education and accessible education, and just non post-secondary structure. It would be such a helpful thing.
And for like, for sort of those like early adults, like I feel like there's a lot for like youths. There's a decent amount for youths. You have like SCAM and you know, other programs, mostly SCAM. and then you know, when you hit, you know, 19, 20, 21, up to 25, and then some, it's like, where do I go?
There's a lot of that gap blossage in the music scene too, where people take lessons and they have school band and whatever, and then unless they're, you know, graduate, filtering right into like music school and connecting with all those people, then they're like, oh, what do I do? Especially kids and families where they got to work right away when they're late teenage years, then even more limiting to be able to access it.
Yeah, so coming up with solutions there. What else? Give me the question again. I feel like I had like more things.
Well, the just getting out of their own. Oh no, what was it?
It was about Victoria and the art scene here.
Yeah, just like what people can do to kind of get out of their own way, and like how it can foster growth more as like a arts community in general. Like, because right now we're going through this space of like, there's so much creativity and there's so much desire from everyone to do things, but we're losing spaces at the same time and all this stuff.
And I feel like people just feel powerless. And I think these spaces of education need to become a little less scary, a little less intimidating, a little less corporate. learning how, like, people like you, like arts admin, how they make it happen, because there are so many ideas but they aren't happening, and when the spaces are disappearing, it's more and more on us to like be extra creative and figuring out ways to make it actually come to fruition.
I think it's also like rallying the city, like being involved in the city and writing to your counselors. And I know it's all really boring stuff,
but even on that realm, like the city itself, like they, because they're, because I see their efforts, but I also see gaps in their efforts too, where it's like, okay, the effort is great but it's only benefiting this certain thing, or there's like, you know, these places are getting grants to do these programs which are awesome, but then those programs are a ticketed thing where it's like, if you got the grant to fund it, why not make it free?
I think that I've been in a couple of the city roundtables talking about like what they can do, like what are the strategies, and they have their music strategies document, which is online, which is kind of cool. I think they have to come up with a new one for next year, but like joining,
we can link it,
being involved in those things I think is really important, and they can only work on what people tell them, and if no one's there, you know, telling them, and it's hard. And I was talking to an artist about this, and she's like, yeah, like I want to go to your round table but I have to work, and like I can't take time off work, drive in from Langford to not be paid to come to your round table. And so I think that's, you know, but somebody has to say, like, you gotta tell the city that that's the barrier, and and then they have to do things about it. But I really think getting involved in those round tables is a big deal, and political involvement is important. It's boring and intimidating, and you're in a room with these people who, you know, for the most part, you know, are pretty boring, and not that they're boring.
We love you, Matt Dell.
But like,
you're not boring.
Like,
but it can be. Yeah, politics can be super boring.
I feel like sometimes the people in the corporate rooms don't understand artists. I think is what I'm trying to say.
A lot of the times they don't.
And very different kinds of people.
And they have a different way of thinking about things, and they have a different way of understanding things. And there's doesn't seem to be a good in between person.
The lube.
Yeah, you gotta have someone to kind of bridge that gap a lot of the time, because it is, there's like creative people are often just not as easily aligned with that political sphere. But like it's a thing that you do have to navigate sometimes here and there
also,
to be able to.
Yeah,
be.
Something I like to say is, get involved now, because one day we are going to be the politicians and we are going to be the people running this city, and I want to fucking know how not to do it. So even if you don't agree with what they say, you should put yourself in those rooms and understand how it's working so that you can understand how to change it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and you can start roundtables. You can do like email the arts liaison for the city and be like, hey, I have this group of people we want to talk to you about. Yeah. Like whatever. So like, you know, one of my friends is doing that for the theater, like the mid-career theater companies, and started a roundtable about what they need. And with the new development going in down by like Valley Village, they're moving the art gallery down there. And but they're not making a theater space. And so it's like, you know, and that was missed because there wasn't a round table for the theater artists. So, you know, filling in those gaps.
And I get that a lot of people are disheartened because they just assume the city's not listening and doesn't care. And so then they like don't feel like it's a point. They feel like they're just shouting into a void when they try to talk to them. But but they do want to hear these things. Like, you know, they do want to hear these things and know these things. And sometimes you just got to talk to people. Like I remember at Skaffest this past year, Matt Dell and someone else from the city were just on a lunch break or something. And they came down to like check out the site set up and like say hi to whoever. And I just immediately took the opportunity to corner him and be like, hey, this new green space right out here, why isn't this part of the festival grounds? Why didn't we just talk about, like, why didn't we move our fence this way? We need this accessible shit. This would have been perfect for that. And he's like, we just finished it. Like, had I known, like, that it was going to be done in time for this, we could have talked about it. And I was like, okay, well, next year. You know, well, it's so like, I don't hesitate.
Sweet.
I will, if I, as soon as I feel like any sort of familiarity with someone, I will just fucking
do that.
I've instant messaged him on Messenger and be like, hey, Matt Dell, what's
up? Yeah, do that all the time.
It's
like,
really
funny. And just be like, hey, Matt Dell, like, I want to have a round table for my artists, and like, can we like get together and talk about you know, what our goals are for the next 5 years or whatever, and then do it.
We're going to link Matt Dell's email address and his personal phone number in the show notes.
Like, no, lucky for him, I don't have his personal phone number. Just kidding. I'm more of a message person anyway.
Yeah, no. I think it's important.
Helps my memory to have, be able to read back what I've said to someone.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
No, that's great. I feel like that's all really solid feedback, and really it really is important too, because that's a realm that a lot of people forget about. You know, you think about all these things and as an artist that you need to do, but you can get yourself as prepared as you want to get prepared. But if the city that you're living in and that's where you have the most ability to do things because your ability to travel might be limited or whatever, then you have to be involved in that. You have to know.
You gotta. And they have to know what the struggle is. And we were in one where we were talking about, like, what are the main struggles for promoters and for venues, and we were like, nobody has rehearsal space.
Yeah,
nobody has rehearsal
space. Space is tough. Yeah,
and then it became one of the grant that it was like emerging artists rehearsal space, and so one of the grants that the Vet got for bands was directly related to that roundtable.
Nice.
And so they created money and then made a grant program
used
for it. So
I think that's really great, and it's important too. Like, yeah, even like my buddy Nathan, who's like lives in Saanich and loves to rep Saanich, he literally puts himself on the bill as like Nathan Shelby of Saanich.
He
plans to go to one of their like meetings and be like, we need more venues in Saanich, we're bigger than Victoria, and their music stuff is putting us to shame. Like,
I just moved to Saanich.
I live out in Saanich too, so that's where I am, is technically the border of rural and urban Saanich. So
I like urban Saanich. Yeah.
Groovy. I love you.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for
being
here.
Thanks for being our first guest.
I love you too.
First
our inaugural squisher.
Felt so good.
Cool.
So nice. So fun.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Yay.
Okay, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me.
Squish.
Love you.
Follow our fucking thing.
Squish. Follow all our silly adventures. Somewhere. We love all our squishers.
Rate it. Give it 5 stars, especially this one, because.
Yeah.
Yep. It required a whole extra audio input that
Whoa.
Katie figured out.
Share
like
your
a box.
Ideas and share your music with us, and tell us what you think would be a good topic, or if you know someone who'd be a great guest, let us know.
Mm. Yeah.
Can't wait to hear the Have You Heard?
Have you heard?
I love that.
This is me noodling around at home.
It's so good.
It's so funny.
I was so embarrassed.
I had a friend who messaged me too, being like, I love your vocals on that.
Yeah. Oh,
I love hearing you on this little jingle thing.
It's cute.
I was so embarrassed because, like, I did them without your little intro before. So I, like, in the intro of just me and my clip, I'm like, have you heard? And I'm, like, kind of off key, and it's just me by myself. And then you sent me that file, and I was like, thank God. But then I had to, like, still play my, like, fake little intro because it's, like, part of my clip where I'm talking.
Oh,
that
I like
so
that you
I made
put it in
chipmunk
a chipmunk
because
vibe.
Because I didn't want anyone to hear what I actually sounded like right after your
That's
fucking
so
awesome
funny.
Vocals.
We can also add you into the thing because I still have the files. So.
I am not touching it. It's perfect. It's perfect. I don't want to touch it.
Yeah,
it
was great.
So good.
I had fun doing those were fun.
They're
I felt like
sweet.
I was on a radio show. I was just like mixing in and out, like fade into
so
this, fade
good.
Out of it. It was fun.
Yeah, in like one day, just bing bang boom.
Bing bang boom.
Okay, guys, have a lovely gosh darn week.
Yeah.
First week of 2025, starting off hot. Just like my girls.
Just like us, being spicy and get in it. Have fun.
Okay.
Do it scared.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was on key.
That was fun.
Good job, baby.
Yay.
Yeah, we did it.
We want to thank everyone who made Squish happen. Specifically, we would love to thank Elena Ullstrom and Renata Baldwin for the wonderful background music for our intro and outro, as well as all of our vocal squishers who offered your cute little voices.
So adorable. We love you so much.
I want to thank Katie for editing together our intro and outro soundtrack.
And Tash for doing the video editing and a bunch of great graphic design work.
That's right. We're thanking ourselves because we fucking did this, bitch. If you've made it this far, thank you so much for sticking around, and we hope to catch you on the next episode.
Heck yeah. Thanks to everyone for being part of it.
Love you.
Love you.